Hey, Zesties, it's Mel.
And Joycey, but you knew that.
Again. So hopefully last week you listened to the first part of our Sydney live show. If not, what are you doing? Go back now.
Go back now because some of this one won't make sense if you don't listen to part one. This is part two of our Sydney live show. Enjoy.
Bye.
So without further ado, I'm going to welcome them back out again. It's the two girls. You know them.
That was a lot more graceful. Okay.
It's harder for me.
So I've got a bit of a pickle here because I don't have a fan hand because I've got a notes hand and a microphone hand. So Mel's going to fan me when I request it. I feel like some kind of Roman
emperor. Do I feel like I always had these as a kid? Like, why did we always have these fans as kids?
I did.
Does anyone else? Yeah, why?
I probably needed one, to be honest.
Is this too much fanning?
No, it's nice.
Do you want to tell everyone how you stole that guy's fan from work?
What guy's fan
that,
from work?
That nice man that gave you his
he
fan.
He gave it to me. I didn't steal it. I didn't walk up to his desk and take
it.
I was really desperate one day and I said, does anyone have one of those little desk fans with like a USB attachment? And then Brad, this nice guy at work, came along and he lent me his because his wife just had a baby, so he understands.
He really understood.
Of a pregnant woman. And then on the Monday, he messaged me and said, look, I was at Coles and I bought a new one. You can have mine. So there was no stealing involved. He was just very nice. He's not here. I don't know why we're shouting out Brad.
Why are you talking about this guy?
He doesn't listen to the podcast. He probably doesn't know our names.
No, I don't think he does know my name.
We're just those girls, as Heno would say.
Yeah. But is this enough fanning or am I doing too
really
much?
It's really nice.
Okay, good.
Are you going to get bored of doing that?
Look,
the whole
I've been
time?
Going to the gym, so I'm into the gym now. I think that I'm a serious boxer. So this arm, it does hurt, but it also it's also hurting less than if I didn't go to the gym.
Okay.
So.
Well, you could stop and I could just prompt you if you like.
How's that? That's
maybe when
work.
You see it dripping down my face, that's
I'll
when you go.
I'll just give myself a little fan.
Yeah, I'll just like jealously watch you fan yourself while I do the hard work. So continuing all Aussie mystery construction hour, I'm here to tell you about Juanita Nielsen.
Juanita.
I just like to say her name, Juanita. I want some.
Oh, what a babe.
There she is.
Oh my God, she's such a vibe.
Yeah. Heno, don't go any further though, because you'll spoil things. There she is. I didn't prompt that. I was going to prompt that later. Anyway. So I used to work with someone with this name, but she went by Janita, which was really boring to me because I couldn't be like Juanita every time I saw her.
Yeah,
that's honestly probably why she goes by Janita, so that people don't do that annoyingly every time they walk past her in the kitchen. So, credits. SMH article by Helen Pitt, a Daily Telegraph article by Neil Keane. I feel like we use a lot of Neil Keane.
We do.
A lot.
I hope you love us, Neil.
I hope he doesn't hate us. A Green Left Weekly article by John Rainford. And facts only, Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. Never fails.
Mostly Wikipedia, to be honest. Okay, so I don't want to do what I did last live show, which was like tell you the fucking life story, backstory of where these people grew up and blah, blah. But I have to because Juanita Nielsen was born in bloody Newey, wasn't she?
Oh, no way!
Yes!
Oh my God,
I didn't know this until I started researching. She was born in New Lambton where I went to school. So clearly we have a deep connection even though that was in 1937. You know, we've got a vibe. So her parents split up and then she ended up going to live with her grandma on the North Shore of Sydney.
Oh, it's all coming together, isn't it?
She gave up the working class Newcastle vibes for the North Shore.
For the North Shore.
How now, brown cow? And she got a bit fancy. She went to Ravenswood.
Oh, I know what Ravenswood is. Yeah. That's the fancy school
and
for the
Pymble
fancy girls.
Ladies College.
Oh, the other fancy school for the fancy girls.
Yeah, so she was very fancy.
Do we have any Pymble or Ravenswood? Nope. Yeah, we had
yes,
one.
I think
that was like literally one person.
You also have a deep connection to a 1937 person. So, you know, when you go into the city and the courthouse is there.
Yeah.
And it's that beautiful old building mm-hmm. and it says Mark Foy's on it.
Oh, my God, I love that building.
Yeah. So that used to be a department store.
Yes.
Called Mark Foy's.
Yeah.
Shocking, right?
Shocking. Who knew? Gosh. Pretty sure it even says department store on it.
Yeah,
but
it does.
Also.
And now people get like sentenced to life in prison in
That's
there.
That's really
is
weird.
Weird. But so on her dad's side, she was an heiress to the Mark Foy's department store fortune.
Whoa.
Because her dad was the nephew of Mark Foy. How many times can I say Mark
I don't
Foy?
Know, but I'm enjoying it.
Mark Foy
It's
hour.
A good name. It's a strong name.
I promise I might say it twice again, yeah. but I'm done for now. So there's a book about Juanita written by Peter Rees, and it's got this quote that I just had to include because it made me laugh. So one of her cousins saw her at a Sydney wedding and recalled this story. During the evening, this gorgeous creature who looked like a French model and sounded like Tallulah Bankhead came up to me and said, "Darling, could you get me a whiskey, please?" The head waiter told me she couldn't have one. I asked why. He said, "She's only 12.
What the fuck?
Juanita, like... What a fucking boss.
Amazing.
Like whiskey when you're 12.
I don't even think when I first started drinking, I was like, can I please have a fire engine with alcohol in it?
Yeah. Like a vodka and Coke, which is such a cursed combination. Who
cursed
does that?
Combo,
no offense if that's like your poison. But
I mean, like, it's
weird.
Fine.
I think the first alcoholic drink I had in Newcastle was a Jim Beam and Sprite.
No, what the fuck is that?
I vomited that night, guys. Yeah. Yeah. That's like a fancy cocktail in Newcastle. So Juanita actually worked at that department store in the 50s mm-hmm. from when she was about 16, and then she travelled abroad in her early 20s. In 1962, she was 25 and she married a Danish merchant seaman, as you do, named Jorgen Fritz Nielsen.
Jorgen.
And they were in Japan, so it was all very exotic.
Oh, she's very travelled. She's a worldly woman.
Yes, she's worldly, but of course they broke up. I saw that coming. Like, as soon as I read that sentence, I was like, this is not like a long-term situation.
This is like that fling that you have with the fancy cool guy.
Oh, he's
like,
a merchant seaman.
He's a merchant seaman. His name's
Jorgen.
Go in Japan.
And like just caught up in the moment.
Yeah. And then, and then you realize you're like, he's really boring.
He's a merchant
seaman.
And he's
such a wanker.
And his name is Jorgen.
Yeah.
And we're in Japan. No, Japan's cool. Japan's cool.
Japan is cool.
Japan's great. The other stuff, maybe
he
not.
Was probably just really fucking wanky. That's
yes.
all.
Yes. What is a merchant seaman? Now's not the time.
No,
it's
care.
Not the time. So they broke up.
Okay.
And in 1965, she came back to Australia and went back to working at the department store. So my dad actually told me this story, which is funny because he told me the last live show story as well.
Yeah.
But as I said then, he gives me these ideas, but then he doesn't bother coming to the live show. And he doesn't, like, I tell him all this exciting stuff. Like the other day, I was like, we've got 1 million listens. And he was like, he doesn't know what it means. He has no idea.
He's like, what on?
So he doesn't come here, but he gives me the ideas. But Juanita's dad, similarly generous, bought her a local community newspaper.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
hey,
my
dad, can you buy me a local community newspaper, wherever you are?
Like,
in there?
Dad doesn't even jump in the car from Newcastle, come to the live show.
Yeah.
But Mr. Juanita is buying...
The rudeness.
...a fucking newspaper. I don't know if I'd want a newspaper in this economy.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thought
the
might
Wentworth
be nice.
The Wentworth Courier.
The thought might be nice. There's another pic, Heno, if you go forward. There she is with her
my
stack
God.
Of papers.
She's everything I want to be in this world.
Look at those papers. She's just rubbing that
it's
in
like
my face.
That's
look at
what
my
you,
dad got
yeah,
me.
And it's like, do you know how I show that I work at a local newspaper? I carry a giant
I
fucking
carry them
stack
everywhere.
Of them for no reason.
She's got strong arms. She would.
Does. She's got boxers on.
And she was really known for that hairdo, which she proudly
I like
sported.
It. I love it.
Where am I? So he also bought her a house. In King's
Whoa,
Cross.
Fuck off. This is such an eastern suburb story. I'm sorry.
I mean, I can't be too mad because my dad just helped me buy a house, but not in King's Cross. Like, it's in Tasmania. That's not as cool. And then she started the paper as a hobby, but then she became very passionate journalist, which we can relate to.
Yeah, except absolutely. That I don't have a personally bought newspaper myself.
We write mostly about Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, and like...
That's not what she was doing.
I don't
doing.
Even know what I write about anymore. Who knows?
You're just like, a thought is in my head. I'm going to write
crimpies.
It.
Chicken crimpies, yeah.
So she became a bit of an activist who was committed to preserving the neighbourhood where she lived. So the house she lived was at 202 Victoria Street. It's now heritage listed. Heno, if you go forward, there it is. Little terrace.
Oh.
It's still there today.
It's really cute.
Isn't it cute?
What a lovely little decor on the front.
The little like under the windows.
Like, Prue and Trude? Oh, why am I putting on the voice as I say it?
A nice
what
song.
A lovely decor on the front. Oh.
Yeah, it's nice. A nice gesture from her dad there.
Thanks, Dad.
Thanks, Dad. So I Googled it. Apparently it sold for $860,000 in 2013. I think that's a good
deal. That's a fucking bargain for a house.
Yeah.
Shit.
If you go forward again, Heno, there it is now.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I don't think Juanita would have had that
extremely
$129 wardrobe.
Small. If you sleep on that other side of the bed, you're fucked. That looks like every single guy's room. Like they always shove their bed up against the wall and you're like, thank you.
And they're like,
how am I going to wee 50 times in the night?
You have to like pole vault
over
them.
How am I going to wash my
pole
feet?
Pole vault over them. And they're all like, Mom, I don't have a wardrobe. And she gives them $129 to get the Annie Boda from IKEA. We've all got that wardrobe.
Why
we all had it at one
everywhere?
Point. I don't think Juanita would have had that,
no,
just quietly.
She would not.
Look, it's not my taste, but if my dad bought it for me, I wouldn't say no.
I like the brick.
Dad, if you're listening. He's not listening. He doesn't even know what this is.
He doesn't know what a podcast is.
So around the time Juanita was running the paper, it was the 70s, and it was a time of major development in Sydney. So it was when all these rich people were buying up like poor people's property and putting fancy houses there.
Ugh.
Yes.
So like now?
Now. So it happened in Miller's Point, you know, down near the rocks.
Yes. I mean, they still have signs on the houses down there.
Yes, they're still trying to do that. So there was this one businessman, his name was Frank Thiemann, and he had grand plans for Victoria Point.
Okay, we hate him.
We hate him. He's bad. He was like really rich. He was a old-timey PIMP.
Oh, are we
he walked around saying, I don't know what you've heard about me, but you shan't get a shilling out of me.
It's so good. You said you'd do it and you did
I
it.
I did it. According to Wikipedia, he made his fortune in lingerie. And so I'm guessing they mean in the industry and not like physically just...
Hello.
Wearing lingerie.
That's a vibe,
although
though.
It's quite... Here he is, if you go forward, Heno. Where is Frank? There he
is. I think he should.
Yeah. Under that suit is like a bustier.
A bustier.
Yeah.
And a cheeky cut, high cut.
Yes, a high cut thong.
French
no.
knickers.
No, I don't want to think this? About him in a thong, but now I am.
And he's a bad man as well.
And look at, you can tell
he's
he looks
got an
so
evil
nice.
Plot. No,
he
no.
looks so nice.
Look at his creepy face. It's a bit creepy.
He's not showing any teeth. It's like... He's like, that came just after an evil laugh. And look, all these plans.
Yeah, and
that's
he's
all people's houses. That he's like, knock them down. Fucking get rid of them.
Mow them down.
That's Frank. So he was buying up all these old terraces in King's Cross, Potts Point, Woolloomooloo. They're all the same place. If you're in Texas, they're all the same place.
Yeah.
Geographical Josie time.
It's really
just an
is,
area though. In Sydney.
Just
I don't
that
care.
Bit.
So there were all these beautiful old 19th century terraces and his big plan was to evict everyone and then put up high-rise complexes and it was going to be like multi-million dollar shit, right? Boomer. He's a boomer. So Juanita, being a local resident, was very opposed to this idea and she used the newspaper Now as the voice of the people. So it became like anti-Frank Thiemann Weekly.
Love that. Love that.
Go, Juanita. In the newspaper and with her fellow locals, she campaigned against the development. Her partner at the time, David Farrell, who she'd be with for 7 years, said this in a Daily Telly article. She was not a greenie or a political activist in the sense that we know them now. She was actually a bit of a loner. She was just doing her thing and doing it for herself and the people on her street. Bless her.
I mean, this is David. Less cool, but also still cool.
If you go, there he is.
David? What is that hair, David? Oh, honey. Mm-mm. Like, I think when you have fine hair, you just need to keep it short.
Just shave your hair, David.
He'd look so much better with a nice, like, crisp haircut, don't you think?
Yeah, but he's sad for a reason, which
he
we'll get
to. He looks a little bit like Colin Firth if you squint. Like, if I'm squinting, I'm getting Colin Firth and maybe, I don't know. Jeffrey Dahmer. Okay, now we made it weird.
Can I just say, he's not the villain in this story, guys. Let's not be mean to David here.
Sorry, David.
Can you fan me again?
Yeah. It's giving so you like nice. The real like Fabio hair move as well.
Beyonce fan. So thanks to Juanita and the other locals being so vocal, they successfully lobbied the Builders Labourers Foundation, which was a trade union for, I'm guessing, builders and labourers. I thought hard for a while there. Got to that conclusion. They imposed a green ban on the Victoria Street site in 1972. So that means all the tradies were just like, tools down, we're not doing anything, we are striking. Yeah. And stopped enacting Frank's evil plan.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. So a bunch of residents also barricaded themselves into their houses. So some of them were only renting, they didn't own, but they were just like, fuck off, you're not getting rid of me.
I love that.
Barricaded themselves in and refused to leave, which made demolishing them pretty difficult.
Yes.
But it was big business, so things started to get a bit spicy. And when I say spicy, I mean deeply criminal. There were some really fucked up things that happened, actually. I don't know why I'm joking. So Juanita became a little fearful and people began to suspect that Frank might have some underworld connections.
Oh, what a fucking surprise. Mm-hmm. He doesn't smile with
teeth. See, I told you he wasn't nice. And David is not the villain here.
Yeah, poor David.
He just has bad hair.
That's a creepy photo. I'm sorry, but that's a creepy fucking photo.
It is creepy. So in April 1973... another local activist and leader of the Residents Action Group, his name was Arthur King, he was kidnapped by two or three men. He never was like clear about this because he was scared. So he was chucked in the boot of a car and driven down to a motel on the south coast.
Okay.
Which I was just there. It's a very nice place. But
if you're going to get kidnapped.
But I wasn't like thrown into a car and like held hostage there. So I'm sure it was like less pleasant for poor Arthur. And I probably don't think he went to Molly Mook either. No. It's probably just some roadside
I'm thinking it's
situation.
Like right in the middle of Kiama, not in the fun bit, you know.
He's not like browsing the local homewares boutiques. No. Like, oh, maybe I need a $50 candle.
Where should we go for brunch this morning?
I did that. I did that a lot. Anyway, the thugs that kidnapped him told him the only way they'd let him go was if he stopped protesting and also moved out of Victoria Street. So they had some demands. He says they warned him not to go to the police because they had police connections.
Oh, fuck.
And would find out.
That's not good.
Not great.
Thank you.
In another incident the same month, April 1973, this salt-of-the-earth character, Mick Fowler, right? He was a merchant seaman.
What?
He was. He actually was. I only just made that connection. This is merchant seaman hour. So he came home from being at sea and found that his terrace had been like taken over by these thugs. All of his stuff was gone. And he was stopped from entering by three guards that were hired by Frank Thiemann, the evil man that doesn't smile with his teeth. Here's Mick, if we go, Hanno. There he is.
What a vibe. What a vibe.
Bit of an Ivan Milat, but nice.
Yeah, but like, if Ivan Milat wasn't a fuckwit.
Yeah, if he was like a greenie.
Yeah.
Like, he picked backpackers up for, like, nice reasons. Like, I'll help you. I'll take you where you want to go. What am I talking about? Oh, yeah. So Mick rallied 50 unionists, residents, and his merchant seaman friends to help him take back possession of the place, and they ended up taking it back and turfing the security guards out on the street.
Yes.
Go, Mick.
Go, Mick.
We love Mick. And then a lot of people started doing that then. So people ended up, they would get kicked out and then they'd just squat in other people's houses. So they were like evicting someone here and then six people would pop up here and they were just like, fucking asshole residents.
They just won't leave.
According to the Green Left article, in 1974, 30 of Frank Thiemann's henchmen attacked the houses. They were using crowbars and sledgehammers to gain access, and they were also helped by 250 police officers.
What the fuck? But, like, they don't actually have the legal right to do this, right? Like, it's not happening yet.
Well, I think they bought some of the houses and then the renters wouldn't leave.
Oh.
So technically they
but
did.
But also not
But
morally.
Also it's mean.
But
don't
also
do
stop it.
It.
But also fuck you because you're assholes. So the law doesn't count now.
No, it doesn't because
we're just starting
Frank's
like some
mean,
sort of like,
we don't like
coup
him.
In Sydney.
Well, that's what
the
these
law
guys
doesn't
did.
Count, guys. Do whatever you want.
The squatters barricaded themselves in and some of them even were up on the roofs protesting. The siege ended up lasting for 2 days.
Whoa.
But then 53 of them got arrested.
Oh. That's less spicy.
Sorry, I really like hyped you up then and then I was like, then they were all thrown in jail.
Yeah.
So this is not funny. I couldn't find a date for this particular incident, but another local resident, an Indigenous woman named Esther Blaskhouse, was killed after a deliberate arson attack on her home.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Fucking Frank, I tell you. Not a nice
demon.
Guy. The worst guy. So his gang of thugs was led by a bloke named Fred Cray. Do you recognise that name?
Why do I recognize?
He's from one of your mysteries.
Oh.
So he, according to Wikipedia, was an ex-cop who was sacked amidst allegations of organizing bank robberies, and he was suspected of murdering whistleblower and sex worker Shirley Briffman and other Sydney crime figures. And he was implicated in the death of Donald McKay.
Don McKay!
Yes.
Oh,
which is a season two episode by Mel. Great episode.
Great episode.
So he's like suspected.
Great episode.
I did a great job. It is though. It's a great episode. So he was one of the suspects.
Oh, what a fuck. Mm-hmm. I hate that guy.
Not a good dude. Heno, we have a photo of him. Look
you
at him.
You suck. You look like a demon.
This police uniform on. Shame on you. What's that on his eye? Dude, you've got a fly on your eye. Like, blink. What kind of demon doesn't blink? We hate him. So that's Fred. So apparently at the time, the King's Cross Police just let him do his thing. Like, they let him just run rampant.
This is that, like, that period where everyone was just...
Like, corrupt.
Corrupt dickhead.
Very, like, underbelly Fizzy's...
Fizzy's Revenge. Fizzy's Revenge, the
uprising.
Show that should get made, but we don't actually know what it's about.
Or what era it's set in.
No idea.
We always say it for like different stories.
Yeah,
1910, Fizzy's Revenge. 1935, Fizzy's Revenge. This is 1974. Fuck it, it's Fizzy's Revenge, guys.
Fizzy is still avenging.
He's ageless.
Something.
He's always avenging. So, where am I now? Oh, in 1974, the Green Ban was lifted.
Oh, no.
I've written here boring political reasons I don't understand.
Yeah.
Because I knew Heno would just come for me because I'd get it wrong and he'd be like, actually, that's not right.
This is the historical background of that.
Imaginary Heno in my head.
He literally did that to us before about what's his face.
Oh,
De Groot guy.
And
then
Lang.
we were just sort of like, Heno, we're like having rest time right
now. Yeah, I'm like relaxing my feet.
I don't want to hear the history.
Don't tell me that John Lang wasn't hot. He really wasn't. He actually looked like, what did he say? Mario. Super Mario.
Yeah.
So that ruined that
was
fantasy.
Interesting information that I just didn't need at that point in time.
But, you know, we appreciate your intelligence,
We appreciate
Heno.
It. Yeah.
But Juanita managed to get the Waterboard Union to impose their own green ban.
Fuck yes, Juanita.
To hold the development again.
Oh, my God. She must have been so annoying to them.
She's so annoying. But we love her.
Yeah.
But they didn't, which is the key to this story. So in 1975, it was estimated that Frank Thiemann had spent $6 million, which according to Wikipedia is $37 million in today's money, purchasing all this property, and then he just couldn't do anything.
Oh, my God, I love it.
He was hemorrhaging money. His loan, the interest on the loans was costing $3,000 a day. So Frank Thiemann was not happy. He was smiling with no teeth.
He was firmly smiling. He was like you know when you're like, I'm going to burst a blood vessel with my fake smiling now?
You're just like, like shaking. That was him. So he was really pissed off and it was all because of Juanita and these other residents who were not backing down. Mm-hmm. So there's all the background. I know you guys are falling asleep, but like modern history hour.
No, I'm deeply into it.
But here's the zesty mystery that you crave. Here it is. So on the 4th of July, 1975, Juanita had a business meeting, apparently to discuss advertising in her paper. So the meeting was at the Carousel Club, which is a venue in King's Cross. It was a drag club. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a vibe, but it was owned by fucking Abe Saffron.
I know who that is.
He's not a good person at all. He's in another one of your stories.
Yes.
He basically set the fire at Luna Park. Maybe. It doesn't matter. He's dead. Know. I can defame him.
Or Moloch did it. We don't know. That's a demon.
Could have been a demon.
If you haven't listened, you should listen.
But he was really bad. He ran King's Cross.
He was not a good guy.
Underbelly, fizzy, all over.
Fizzy's involved. There was a lot of...
He's just...
All of them.
He is underbelly.
Razor was there. Yeah. I don't know.
So he's...
Who's that Melbourne one? That guy? Carlton? That guy. No.
What?
The one that lived in Carlton. Never mind. I'm so sorry. Keep going. I was off on an underbelly aside and it wasn't necessary.
Was it the first underbelly?
You know that guy? Carl Williams, not Carlton.
Carlton. Carlton from Williams Carlton. The third.
Carl Williams from Carlton. Anyway.
Yes. Oh, all those guys. Yes.
He had a tennis court. That's all I remember. Anyway, keep going.
Hannah, I have a pic of Abe.
Abe, damn. I'm sorry. Abe can get it.
Look at that judgmental guy in the background.
This photo in general. I know. That guy in the back is just like, well. I wish I was not here. That's a profile pic on Facebook. That's a profile pic for LinkedIn.
Yeah.
That's going... LinkedIn, if you're a fucking criminal, is this not your LinkedIn profile?
Oh.
Hey.
We're smiling with this horrible criminal.
This guy.
Austin Abe.
Love Abe.
There were so many photos of him as a bloated old man that I couldn't resist.
No, that's...
The spicy leg.
Once he was a spicy whippersnapper.
He was, with a judgmental friend.
With an evil soul.
So this place, the Carousel Club, was managed by Jim Anderson, who was an even worse person.
Oh, no.
He'd killed another underworld figure named Danny the Glove Smith.
The Glove.
The Glove.
Amazing nickname.
So it was a pretty sus establishment. I don't want to victim blame here.
Yeah.
But I would not be putting on my best beehive wig, taking my stack of papers and trotting down the street to meet at Abe Saffron's
club. Wouldn't either.
It's just not what I'd be doing.
It's probably, a warning light in
your head. And when I've been pissing off a well-connected developer for 3 years, I wouldn't be doing
that.
Not
a great decision.
But that's what Juanita did. And it was surprising because she'd been in, they'd been trying to meet with her for a while. So she'd been invited to a media night there a few weeks before and she didn't go because she was sus on it. Mm-hmm. And then she was invited to a meeting by the Carousel's PR man a few days later and she didn't go. And then Edward Trigg, who was an employee at the club, he was kind of like the guy that just did all the shit-kicking stuff for Jim Anderson.
Yeah.
He and another guy went to her house, but she made her boyfriend answer the door. And so then they just
And they
like,
were scared for his hair?
They were scared. They were like, he looks like Jeffrey Dahmer. He's going to eat us. Quick, say something about advertising. And they're like, can we advertise in the paper? And then the guy was like, no. And then they left. Nothing sus happened. And then on the 3rd of July, 1975, the Carousel's receptionist, Loretta Crawford, phoned Juanita to set up this meeting for the next day. And that's the one that she surprisingly decided to go to. So she'd agreed to keep David across all her movements because all of this shady shit was happening. And at 10:30... she called him to say she was running late for that meeting.
Yeah.
That was the last time he ever heard from Juanita. Her handbag was found 8 days later on the side of the F4 freeway in Penrith, but no other trace of Juanita Nielsen has ever been found. And no one at the Carousel Club, funnily enough, was forthcoming with any information at the time, with Edward Trigg and Loretta Crawford both saying that she'd left alone and the cops didn't really seem to push the issue.
Wonder why.
All 250 of them just like, maybe we should displace some more residents. I don't know.
Let's
concentrate
that
on that instead.
Arse-holy.
Yeah. So it wasn't until 1977, 2 years later, that any major developments happened. So Edward Trigg and two other Carousel employees were arrested in connection with her disappearance. Hannah, I've got a picture. There she is. I just wanted to show her.
I'm not 100% on board with the hair anymore. But
I know. And it was a wig.
I know. And like, I love everything else about her vibe. I mean, I guess it's very bold and it's very, you know, it's very serious.
It was a wig.
Hair.
So underneath, I feel like she was bald.
Possibly.
I don't know. But anyway, Edward talked, admitting that when he visited her house a couple of weeks beforehand with the bartender, they had intended to kidnap her and maybe scare her a little, in inverted commas, kind of like maybe like Arthur, take her to the South Coast, you know, don't speak, move out of your house vibes. But police found no evidence that linked him to actually murdering her, so he was only charged with conspiring to kidnap her and served just 3 years in jail. Well, the other guy, I couldn't find a name, other guy.
That guy.
He served 2 years and then there was another guy, but he was acquitted. According to the Daily Tell, this is where it gets very sus. Mm-hmm. So according to the Daily Telly article, Jim Anderson had received a $25,000 payment, so he owned the club, from Frank Thiemann 6 weeks before this meeting with Juanita, allegedly to open a new nightclub.
What a coincidence. Mm. That's definitely not money to kidnap and murder someone.
And then after Juanita's disappearance, Frank Thiemann's Victoria Street development went ahead and he started making all of that money. We hate Frank so much. So it certainly seems, I can say this because they're all dead, that Frank, Abe and Jim Anderson were all involved in this plot to get rid of Juanita. There's even rumours, and you'll love this, as a pylon enthusiast, that...
As a pylon enthusiast!
And more specifically, a pylon death enthusiast.
Oh, my God.
That she's buried in the pylons of the actual apartments that she was...
I thought you were
going to
say the Harbour Bridge. God. That is some evil shit.
If you go to the next pic, there's Edward Trigg.
What
we don't
dickhead.
Like you.
We hate you.
You've got a weak chin. Doesn't he?
He does. He's trying to cover it with his beard, but it's not really working.
He's trying, like, with his bum fluff.
He's
but
really trying.
It's not working.
No.
So both receptionist Loretta Crawford and Edward Trigg's girlfriend, Marilyn King, made various claims to journalists over the years, but not police. So they'd just tell journalists these like wild claims about what happened that day, but they didn't actually go to the police. So Loretta said that she never saw Juanita come out of the room, even though she said she saw her leave by herself.
Right.
And so she was alive, but now she's saying she never saw her come out. Then later she said that Juanita left with Trigg. She later changed that to say she'd gone to the basement and seen Juanita dead on the floor.
Whoa.
With an unknown man, standing over her holding a gun.
What? And that's just like she just told the paper that? And
so then it's like what? She'd say it in like 1985, then like a few years later she changed it again. Like she was talking till the early 2000s about this. Marilyn King told a journalist in the 2000s that Edward Trigg had come home, so she was his girlfriend.
Yeah.
That he'd come home with blood on his clothes and hands that day, and also that he'd made a mysterious car trip a few days after the meeting, perhaps to dump those belongings in Penrith because they were found like 8 days later.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But none of these accounts were ever substantiated or investigated. Again, I wonder why. And
but
because
surely
there was...
the police weren't like assholes by this point.
Well, well.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's be honest.
And there was no evidence and nobody, so it made it all very hard to prove.
Yeah.
Then, in March 2013, the Australian newspaper claimed that Trigg, who died in February 2013, had written the truth about Juanita's death in some kind of deathbed confession manuscript, and that it was in his house somewhere. And it named names of people involved in the conspiracy to kill Juanita and also revealed the final resting place of her body. According to our friends at Wikipedia, because I actually couldn't find the actual source. They've just quoted this, but I don't know where they got it. They did not attribute this correctly. A New South Wales police spokesperson confirmed that police from Redfern local area command had searched his residence after his death, but they refused to comment on the outcome. Finding it really hard to get on board with the cops story.
I'm trying.
They're
to
just
be
like, we're not going to tell you what we found, if we found anything.
And if I just happen to have a big wad of cash in my pocket, it's just a totally coincidence.
I don't have a wallet, so I just carry
$10,000. I don't trust the banks. I just carry it with me. Okay?
In old-timey money in my pocket. All my shillings.
Heaps and heaps of like gold bullion in there. Yeah. Just a lot of it.
It's hard to walk when you're this corrupt. Just. So a journo named Barry Ward spent many years investigating the case, and he claims that Juanita was actually gearing up to blow the whistle on widespread police corruption and involvement in organised crime in King's Cross. So it was bigger than Frank. It was bigger than, I'm just going to stay in my house and piss you off. Like, she was investigating something big. Yep. Ward points out this is backed up by the police's failure to act on leads, and even the 1983 coronial inquest found that the investigation may have been, quote, hampered by police corruption. I love that they then just didn't do anything with
I
that.
I know. It's
They're like
well,
how terrible. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. Continuing on with
didn't investigate any of the cops who were supposed to be doing their jobs. So Barry Ward, this journo, calls Juanita Nielsen's case, without doubt, the greatest unsolved murder conspiracy and cover-up in Australian criminal history.
Whoa.
There's a pic here. So Juanita, although her body was never found, is memorialised with this big fuck-off monument. her dad probably paid for this.
Yeah, he definitely paid for that.
And that's at South Head Cemetery.
I know South Head Cemetery.
Yeah. But 44 years on, no trace of Juanita has ever been found, and the case remains with our friends, the police, the Unsolved Homicide Squad. And that's the very sad story of Juanita Nielsen.
That's fucked. I want some new, like, investigation into it.
They won't because they're covering up
with
all their bullions.
They're embarrassed with all their bullions. And then there's just more bullions getting added to those pockets.
Yep.
Now we're getting into defamation.
Yeah, now these people are alive. We probably
shouldn't say that.
Things about the police. They do good things sometimes.
They do. I don't hate all cops.
They arrested teacher's pet man.
They did.
That's something that they did.
Yes, they did that.
That's about it. But yeah, what are your thoughts?
Look, I mean, she's definitely dead.
Yes.
Which is upsetting.
Yeah.
Well,
she kind of just would be by now. Kind of like the guy that survived the fall.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, either way, she's
kind of be like very old.
It's just really fucking shit. What did he end up building?
Just like big fucking apartments.
Oh, yeah.
In Potts Point. You could probably... Well, her house is still there because it was protected because she was special.
Yeah.
But everyone else's houses got knocked down.
Oh, that's really
hers is heritage listed, so you can go and see it. And the IKEA wardrobe.
She has a plaque as well. Someone
she has a plaque. She has a community centre named after her.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah,
I like when they do that.
Yeah. Well, they had to do something.
Yeah,
they didn't investigate a fucking
murder.
Well,
yeah. I mean, yeah. Okay. And that's depressing again.
There's no way to end this on a light
note.
No,
there isn't.
So we should just say thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. We've had a great time.
We have
sweating up here.
Sweating. I think I've lost 5 kilos
in sweat. Trying not to flash our nude undies. Just what a time. If you haven't bought merch, come buy merch.
Merch. I haven't heard anyone mention merch tonight.
What
is
there merch?
Just brand new information. Also, Henno was wrong. It's in the pedestrian Instagram story.
It's on the pedestrian Instagram story.
Not the Aussie Mystery Hour one. Get it right, Henno.
We're also doing a show in Melbourne if anyone feels like flying down there.
Yeah, there's like 9 tickets left. They're a bit more keen than Sydney, which is fine.
It's fine. It's okay.
They love us.
Have a Merry Christmas. We're going to – we'll go and hang around down there, wherever that is.
Somewhere
in the void.
In that
and
black void.
Please come say hi.
Yeah.
And, yeah, cool.
That's
Thank
it.
You.
Thanks.